On this episode of Still Loading, the Nintendo Switch of Rappers. Hello everyone, welcome to this new episode of Still Loading. I am your host, Josh, and today I have a very special guest on the podcast. First time on the podcast. He is a nerdcore rapper, and also you do a lot of other stuff besides just rapping. I remember seeing some of your influences that kind of go into your rap is like musical theater and stuff like that, and dance and stuff like that.
Yeah. So I'm a rapper, recording artist, songwriter, pop artist, dancer, actor. In a former life, I was a musical theater performer on Broadway and off-Broadway shows. And then in a former life, I was a product manager at a tech company, which is what I still do now in my daytime.
Okay. So today, the lovely voice you just heard, I have Super Smack on today. Smack, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. It's pretty cool to be on here. I've been a fan of the show for a bit. And yeah, thanks for having me on.
Thank you for coming on. So we first became acquainted because a year ago, actually, we looked it up before we recorded, about a year and a half ago now, I posted something about Megaran, and you messaged me saying you're also a nerdcore rapper, just getting your start, and you sent me the link to your first single called Choose. So I guess my first question is, what got you into, like, what inspired you to become a nerdcore rapper, or just get into music in general? I guess it's kind of a loaded question because, like you were saying, you were in musical theater, so getting into music is kind of a broad question, but let's start with music and then how that branched into nerdcore.
Yeah. So I have been... Music has been a big part of my life for a long time. Growing up as, like, a little kid, I was always, like, doing, like, singing and dancing performances, shows, and that kind of stayed with me as a hobby as I got older. And in college, like, a big part of my social scene was, like, being on, like, the hip-hop dance crew, like starting an a cappella group. And
a cappella group, really?
Yeah. So I just, like, I actually got into rapping later on in life. I was a singer first, so yeah, that was where my kind of artistic interests and hobbies were at first. And then after I graduated from undergrad, I went to work at a kind of normal, like, 9-to-5 job. But then I kept, like, dance and music as, like, a big hobby. And then, like, fast forward 5 years later, I actually decided I wanted to try it professionally. So I had this 2-year stint where I did musical theater. So like Broadway style musicals, auditioning. And I was living in New York City at the time. So, like, kind of going up against, like, the best of the best at, like, these auditions. And that was, like, really what I wanted. I wanted, like, the challenge. Like, I wanted to know how good I was. Like, this thing that I was just doing as a hobbyist, could I actually compete with, like, people who were, like, trained in this professionally? And that was, like, a big question. Yeah. And I was like, I have to, I'm, like, way too curious and, like, competitive. I want to know the answer to this. And so I did it, and I got, like, actually a good amount of success and was really happy with what I accomplished there along the way. So I'd spent, like, a couple years now I did a couple shows or a couple productions of In the Heights, which was Lin-Manuel Miranda's first musical before he did Hamilton.
So yeah. So you were directed by him then? Or was it that he wrote and
It was one that he wrote and I did a performance of. But Robin DeJesus, who was one of the original cast members of In the Heights, was brought back into one of the productions that I was on.
Okay.
And then our director was actually one of the original cast members from the production. So we had this, like, lineage from, like, the kind of original show.
From the original crew.
Yeah, so I got to, like, learn a lot from that. And I got into those shows, funnily enough, because, like, if you're familiar with Hamilton, it's like, oh, it's like hip-hop and theater, like, this, like, niche thing. That was kind of this niche that I had, like, accidentally occupied without even really trying, because, like, my favorite form of dance was always, like, hip-hop and street dance styles, hip-hop house and different okay. street dance. And I was getting into rapping kind of from being around these shows where, like, rap was used as the storytelling medium. And because I got into these, I started doing these shows more, I was like, oh, rap is pretty cool. Let me try writing some of my own original work.
Okay.
And kind of long story short, I ended up kind of cultivating that as a skill and really, really liking it. And after a couple years of doing musicals where I was mainly performing music that other people wrote, I decided that I wanted to create my own original work. And so I kind of wrapped up that musical theater part of my career and decided to focus on writing and producing original music. And that is where I started Super Smack from.
Okay. So that's kind of my brother's very jealous because he's actually a working actor who wants to do stage work. He graduated and he's working on it, but unfortunately, as you know, everything's closed down right now. So
it's yeah, not like that's, he can, not, that's unfortunate.
Yeah, it's not like he can find work at the moment. But no, he would be really jealous to hear that. He's a huge Lin-Manuel Miranda fan. And I feel like, especially since you have that background, you and him could probably just talk for ages about like stuff you like about musical theater. But in any case, so that was the music portion of Nerdcore. So then the other half of yeah. the Nerdcore equation would be the nerd part.
Yeah.
You specifically focus on video games to start, but I see like your most recent single isn't about video games. It's about mm-hmm. it's called Screens, and it's about screen addiction, which we'll get into that. Yeah. But
yeah, there's some video game tie-ins there with like video game addiction and kind of my mm-hmm. flirtations with that, as well as some of the other rappers who are on that track with me. And then fun fact is actually the underlying beat samples the melody.
Oh, yes, from, I noticed
Do you know it?
I recognized it and I couldn't think of it at the time.
Yeah.
I don't say it. I don't remember it off the top of my head. I remember hearing it though.
Yeah, Super Mario RPG, Geno's Forest Maze. That's what it is.
The forest theme or one of the
yep exactly.
I could listen to that all day. That Yoko Shimomura, what's her first name?
I think that's right.
Is it Yoko Shimomura?
I think so.
Fantastic soundtrack. Good yeah. choice for would you say that's the sample or like the underlying melody underneath it? Or
I would say it's not a sample because we didn't take the exact thing. It's more like a, I don't even know the exact
musical term
for it. Yeah, like an allusion or something like that. But basically, there's a line from the melody that we use in the chorus of this song. As this like some of the other video game tie-in stuff has been more obvious. It's like, all right, I'm gonna do a song about like with this like Pokemon beat, and it's mm-hmm. like very obviously Pokemon. I'm gonna lean into this with the lyrics and stuff. This one, I was like, let me just like layer it in like super deep cuts, and thematically to me it made sense too, because from my experience and then talking with other people wrestling with various forms of addiction, it does feel like this kind of trap that you can't get out of. Mm-hmm. And I thought it would be fun to take this this level from Super Mario RPG, which is literally a maze that has all these different like you keep going in one direction and you can't get out of the maze, mm-hmm. and kind of flip that and take it in kind of a darker direction and use that as like to support this kind of message about addiction. So yeah, I thought that was
I like that.
That was really fun. It's also an amazing game. One of my favorite games of all time. So
my first question in regards to that though, what first got you into video games? Because you reference it a lot. Like obviously you just pulled that yep. deep cut from Super Mario RPG. I loved in your, oh my gosh, I have your thing up here. Hold on, your Bandcamp, your Neon Red EP.
Oh yeah, yeah.
The last track on it has like the Wii Shop music.
Yep.
And like stuff like that. Like I love that those little nods. So what first got you into video games?
Yeah. Oh man.
You also referenced Nintendo 64, I remember, in one of your songs.
Yeah, yeah. So the very first video game system that I had was actually a system called the Good Boy.
And I don't think I've heard of it. Was it a knockoff or was it?
Yeah, so no one has ever really heard of this unless you're from like Southeast Asia. It's like my family's from the Philippines. I'm Filipino American. I was born here in the U.S. and grew up here. But like we would get like gifts and stuff a lot from like the Philippines. And we had the system. It was black and it had like six buttons, red and blue. And you turn on the system and you just have like this list of like hundreds of games. And it was like, we kept this entertained forever. And I remember like playing these games and then like later I would go over to my friend's house and they were like, oh, like check it out. Like I got this new tennis game for my Nintendo. And we play it and be like, oh, I have this game. And they'd be like, oh, like I got this like track and field game. I'd be like, oh, I have that game too. And like Puyo Puyo, like I have that too. And then it wasn't until like a couple years later when I was like a slightly older kid, because this was like me growing up in the 90s, like the NES era, I realized what I had was a bootleg system that was like sold in Asia, and it was just a hacked NES. Wow. Like emulator with like all the ROMs for like every NES
game.
That's
fantastic though. I mean, you got exposed to so many different games that way. That actually reminds me. My church has gone on missions trips before to Mexico, and this ties back into what you're talking about, where we would go down there, and one of the things we would go to this orphanage there, and one of the things I bonded with some of the kids is that they also like video games. And the one kid had a PSP that was hacked and had so many different ROMs, and it was the level, and that wasn't just him. Like in general, we would go to a marketplace, and this wasn't video games, but you would see so many bootleg DVDs being sold. Like this, these guys would have walls of like new releases too. Like I remember the one year they had Up like less than like 2 weeks after it was released, like just on DVD.
Yep.
And so it was just it's kind of a funny connection. Your story reminds me of that, of just like this ridiculous bootleg culture that is much more prevalent outside of the U.S.
Especially in like developing countries. Mm-hmm. I think that's just like something about human beings is like, you know, our water might not be clean and we might like the electricity might be crappy, but like, God damn it, we're going to find a way to entertain ourselves. Even if it means we got to pirate the stuff that like we're hearing about, you know, from You're Japan and America. Like I've got to get this 8-bit Superman video game for Nintendo that was based on the movie.
That's fantastic. I always love watching YouTube videos of people who play bootleg games. Like JonTron did a bunch of videos of bootleg Pokemon games, and probably one of the strangest ones, there was two NES games, but it was never officially released in the US. I believe they were from China, but I don't remember. Mm-hmm. But they were licensed, quote unquote, games based off the Titanic movie. Which makes even less sense, because when Titanic came out, what, late 90s, 98, I want to say, the N64 and PlayStation were out. The NES was two generations prior to that. So I don't know what kind of idea they were going for of like making a licensed, well, not licensed game, but making a game based off the Titanic movies 15 years after the console had already finished it, or like almost 10 years after the console's life cycle is pretty much done. Like, it's so weird. Yeah.
Licensed games are a whole thing. They're, I don't know. Licensed games are so funny. They so many of them are so bad, but then they're like, a lot of them are so bad that it's almost endearing, like how bad they are. There's been some pretty bad ones. My favorite licensed game, I think, might be, there were some really good Lord of the Rings games that were based on movies. Yeah.
There was I remember playing a handful of them, usually for like PS2, GameCube, Xbox, like that kind of generation of games, if I remember correctly, at least.
Yes, yeah. And then for PC, they had this great strategy game called Battle for Middle-earth.
It was basically, I know what like, you're talking about, actually.
It was like Warcraft, but with like the Lord of the Rings movies. And they had like the soundtrack from the movies, too, like... Da, 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 and, oh man, it was badass.
What other games did you play besides your initial entry in with the bootleg system?
Okay, so I pretty early on, I became like a Nintendo kid. Mm-hmm. I think something about my natural inclination, I like the bright colors and the like kind of weird, quirky characters. I play like gritty, realistic games too now from time to time. But even now, like I'm like a Nintendo kid through and through. And so, yeah, I got really into that. Loved my Super Nintendo. All the Capcom games, like Nintendo and Capcom, were my favorite developers. Super Mario RPG, like I mentioned earlier, was probably one of my favorite games of that era. Such a good game.
I beat that for the first time like last year, actually.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
oh,
it's so good.
Great. Yeah. And then N64. And then I had a GameCube and got really into Smash and Super Smash and Melee during that time. And then, like, interestingly, I actually kind of fell off of video games in a big way. I don't know if like you've ever had a gap.
Yeah, for me it was a little bit different. Like, it's weird because in late high school and college I got back into it. It's like, mm-hmm. I always liked them, but I wasn't as obsessive about them as I am now. So I totally understand what you're talking about.
Yeah, I just had this 10-year, for me it was like a 10-year period from the end of high school through like after, like well after college, where I just like was interested in other things. I got really into movies. I got really into like music and theater, and video games were just like something that I enjoyed, but I didn't actively keep up as a hobby. Like I didn't own a Wii. I didn't own a Wii U. Those whole generations just like entirely skipped over. And then I got back into it like three years ago. And I don't know exactly the reasons why I got back into it, but I do know like how it kind of ended up merging in with my music stuff, which was at the time. So I was like studying a lot of hip hop, right? I was like, if I'm going to make hip hop, and then eventually now I make like hip hop, R&B and pop music. But at the time it was like hip hop. It's like, if I'm going to make hip hop, like I need to know my shit. Like I need to be like an actual student of the game. So, I did like a lot of listening and like a lot of reading and like watching documentaries too. And I realized like a lot of the greats, especially of like the golden era, but even now, these rappers, such a big theme for them especially in the earlier works, was where they grew up.
Yeah.
Jay-Z, Brooklyn, Nas, Queens. You have like the West Coast rappers, Snoop Dogg, LA, like all of these artists were so grounded in where they grew up. And when they would rap, it's like you were like transported to this place.
So you got a little bit of their culture through their music.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like I understood that. And I understood that also as like I kind of understood it as like a technique also. I was like, this is something that you can do to give your work authenticity. Okay. And so I was like, all right, so how does this apply to me? Where can I transport people to? And I thought about like where I grew up, and I was like, the places where I grew up, I don't really have a super strong connection with, at least in a way that I think would be interesting musically or artistically. Southern California, Phoenix, Arizona, there's like some stuff that I could say about these places, but like I also moved around like more than, you know, all the rappers I just mentioned. Like I moved around to different states more than they did, so I didn't have this like deep grounding.
I mean, you could also use that as an experience for the basis of it. Like you wouldn't, instead of talking about like the culture of the area, you would talk about the culture of like having to move. Like my dad my dad moved around a lot as a kid too. I grew up in a very like in one area. I still live in the same fucking area. So it's that's a little bit different. Like if I were to become a rapper, I'd be probably rapping about the Bible Belt and Amish people and Pennsylvania Dutch.
And that's the thing, is like you got to take whatever is like, you got to take your ingredients, right? Like you can't change those ingredients.
Exactly.
Yeah. So yeah, what I ended up actually kind of turning a corner on was, I was like, wait, when I was a kid, the place where I was actually more often than not was in my own head. Or like in some imaginary, like in my own imagination, or in some like world that was being told to me through like a cartoon or like a video game or something like that. Like I was always playing with Legos, action figures, like making up these crazy scenarios in like my little like playroom or whatever. And so I was like, well, why don't I go back to that? And so I actually started listening to a lot of video game music. And I actually got back into video game music before I got back into actually playing video games.
Okay.
And I got back into video game music and I was like, this music is amazing. I used to listen to this as a kid. Like my early experiences on the internet, like AOL, when you had to use like the free CDs or whatever,
oh,
I would like
God.
Plug that in and I would like search and I would find these MIDIs of like old Super Nintendo games. Anyway, I was like, this music is sick. Like I want to rap over this. And so I started writing songs that were like kind of grounded in this video gamey digital 16-bit world. And that was where I kind of crafted my first sound, like chapter one of Super Smack kind of started there.
Okay.
And that to me felt really authentic, and it like was very creatively enabling for me to do that. And then like as I got really back into the music, I was actually like, all right, now I want to play video games again. And then now I'm like, I play video games all the time again, and it's good. It's like full circle.
Do you find that once you got that jumping off point, then your music could evolve into stuff beyond just what it originally started as? Like, mm-hmm. Like yeah. we were talking about with Screens, where it wasn't just this happy-go-lucky. It's not this happy-go-lucky thing talking about your love of video games and the community around video games. Now you're talking about, like we were talking about screen addiction. You also had, now admittedly, I don't remember the lyrics of it, but you had a song called Somewhere to Be.
Yep. Yeah.
I remember when you released that, I was trying to remember what it was called, but like, yeah. So do you find that like that jumping point gave you the confidence to do other stuff out within, I would assume within rap, but I guess.
Oh yeah. Because totally.
You said you do R&B and pop too.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean like Somewhere to Be is kind of like this, it sits in this place between, and I released that in May of this year. It's like musically, it's actually like kind of this like R&B bedroom pop, like indie pop jam. And that song it's basically a hookup song. Like it's like a smooth, like kind of sexy, but also like cute in a way. And like, it's like me and then this amazing rapper. Her name is E-Turn. She's Iranian American from the Orlando area.
Okay.
Yeah, you should check her out. She's dope. I actually met her. We were both at a Megaran show.
Okay.
Orlando. Yeah, it was like one of the Mountain Nerdcore shows down there last year. And I met her there. And so we did this track together, and yeah, that has a total different energy. It's like not really, it's not like about gaming or it has anything to do with gaming. So I've definitely been comfortable branching out. But it was, I think it's also useful for like artists to have an identity that is very distinct.
Mm-hmm.
And so kind of the video game aesthetic, and for anyone who's like, you know, checking out my work or familiar with my work, like, an iconic thing that part of my look when I perform particularly certain songs is I wear this jacket that is basically like the Switch Joy-Cons, like one side is red, one side is blue.
Yeah.
And I made that for a music video and people loved it so much that I just started wearing it to live performances. It became this like iconic thing. So I think it's really useful to like not have these things limit you. But then it's also useful if you don't have things that like kind of define your character, then you don't really have any sort of interesting artistic identity.
And to tie it back with, like you were saying, to find that unique stamp, one of the things I found most unique about your music is your musical theater influence. Your first single that you released, Choose, that has a really heavy, like, especially the music video. I believe I remember reading your sister directed the video, right?
My sister did. She directed and co-choreographed it, and she is a Broadway star. Like, no way around it. She's, like, she's been in, like, 8 Broadway shows.
Wild,
yeah, she's,
that's
like...
Wild. That's so cool.
She's the talented one.
You're both talented. All I do is I talk for fun. At least you can make music, and she can do music and dance, and well, you can dance too. What am I talking about?
So my sister is dope, and she did that music video, and that Choose was a really challenging song to write because I wanted to write an origin story, and this is something that I do, kind of tying it in with like video games and theater, is a lot of nerdcore artists, and I love nerdcore, and I love like a lot of nerdcore music. A lot of nerdcore, some nerdcore artists though, it's just like, I'm just going to rap about video games, and here's, I'm going to rap about anime, and I'm going to like recap the episodes of this anime. And I think that that's cool, and I actually dig a lot of that music. Something that I wanted to do, though, was like go a step beyond that or in a different direction where it's like, mm-hmm. I don't just want to rap about the video game. I want to like use this as like a metaphor to like understand something about myself. And so I've taken this kind of weird, crazy, windy career path, and I was like, oh, this is a lot like choosing your character at the beginning of like in a character selection screen.
That's a good way to think about it.
Yeah. So, and that's something I like about video games is like you get to be who you want to be, right? And so that's mm-hmm. in the song was like, here in the jungle, you be whoever you want to, but it's like you're choosing your fighter from the selections of come through.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
I was about, so I could hear it, the song in my head when you were going through it.
Yeah. So I had this like Super Smash Brothers beat. And this jazzy rendition of like the Super Smash Brothers menu theme song. And I was like, I'm going to use this to tell my origin story of all the different hats that I've worn, all the different characters that I've played in this like video game of life or whatever. Mm-hmm. And yeah, musical theater was obviously one of those characters, one of those hats that I wore. And so we worked that into the music video, which I highly recommend anyone who's listening to this, go check it out. Just search for Super Smack Cheese on YouTube.
I'll include a link to it. I'll include a link to your Bandcamp. Or actually, what's the best place? But I know we're not at the plugs just yet, but like, what yeah. is the best place for people to buy your music? I always wonder that with some artists, like, where do you get the most kickback? You know what I'm saying? Like, because I know yeah. you can buy stuff on Amazon, but Amazon takes a cut. Same with Apple. Yeah. Would Bandcamp yeah. be the best? Or
Bandcamp is the most artist-friendly of the music platforms.
There we go. I'll include that link then.
I have made the most money, and a lot of artists in this kind of nerdcore subgenre really thrive on Bandcamp because of that. So props to Bandcamp. But I also, I'm also a huge Spotify user as a listener. Mm-hmm. I'm just like on Spotify all day, and I also really appreciate if people just want to stream my music on Spotify. Like I'm over the moon by that as well. So either one of those, Spotify or Bandcamp, and then I have some stuff on YouTube as well, but those are probably the three biggest.
Good to know. I always wonder about that because so every now and then I'll reach out to music artists if that I like I use a lot of GameChop stuff because their stuff is Creative yeah. Commons, and I'll buy it and I'll include a link, but that's Creative Commons, so I know I can do that so long as I'm including a link to it. But anyone else, I always like to ask, and then I also like yeah. to ask what link should I use, because whatever's going to get them the most kickback, that's kind of what I want to go for.
They are so good. I admire GameChops and like DJ Cutman and like everything they've built over there for like two reasons. One, the music is amazing.
It's really good.
As a video game music like nerd, I love it. But two, they also, and not a lot of people really know this, they actually pioneered the way to properly do video game music covers.
Really? So
they kind of like figured out, like, because they were like, we love doing these remixes, but like we would like to get paid, but we also don't want to be thrown in jail, and we want the original composers of this to get paid too. Like, there's got to be some sort of win-win scenario here. So like they basically just did the research and kind of established these norms around like how to do a cover song, how to get a cover license for a video game song in a way that is like legal and also easy-ish to understand. There's some parts that are like still complicated, but it's not GameChop's fault. It's like the law's fault for being like way too complicated. It's
probably also the video game publishers and developers' fault. Because like one thing I've noticed on their stuff, they have a lot of Sega music, which that's not a mm-hmm. criticism. Sega is very fan friendly. Like mm-hmm. you can see it all over their social media. They're really nice to their fans with how they let them use their copyright, their intellectual property. That's the word I was trying to think of. Nintendo doesn't really allow that nearly as much. Like it takes a lot more to break through that wall, so that's yeah. why you don't see nearly as many.
I will say, testament to Nintendo, they've gotten a lot better over the last like 2 or 3 years. They used to be really have this like very adversarial mindset towards like third-party content creators or like DIY content creators, which made no sense. And I think finally they're coming around to like, oh wait, this is actually good for us. Like,
it's free advertising.
It's free advertising, and these people just love our games. And exactly. like, they're gonna make content. And it's gonna make other people love their games too. I mean, that's why I bought. If it wasn't for dope video game remixes, I might not have gotten back into gaming because like the music got me back in.
I was just thinking about this. You were saying before how you're drawn to Nintendo in general. Do you think that maybe you're drawn to it because they're, like you said, their characters are very bright. They kind of have a little bit of a theatrical appeal to them. They're not very nuanced. I think that's the right term for that. They're not subtle. Like they're very like Bowser is very clearly defined, and in theater, from my understanding, I only took one improv class in college, so don't kill me if I'm wrong on this. But like in theater, you can't be as subtle as you would on camera because you can't get body language. People are, you know, far away from the stage, so you have to project to the back. You have to project to the back of the audience, not just to the person 5 feet away from the TV screen.
Yeah, I've never thought about it that way, but that makes sense. They are very, especially musical theater, is very broad. The comedy is very like. It's very cartoony, mm-hmm. and like Nintendo has that aesthetic as well. I think that that's definitely a big part of it. Those are mainly the Mario characters. Like I would say, like you know, you could argue some of the like Zelda games or like Metroid games are like a little bit more understated, right?
Zelda, I would say, is like the Shakespearean version of Nintendo, where it's very dramatic, but still like Shakespeare is still a play, so it's still over the top and it's got its dramatic moments. I would say probably the most subtle Nintendo property. This is based off nothing other than my opinion.
Yeah.
Metroid. Metroid is a very dark, brooding sense, and it's very... The game design is very subtle because it subtly leads you to a lot of different places. Samus, obviously, is... She is a woman, but at the same time, that is not her defining characteristic, so they're much more subtle with how they... Mm-hmm. Subtle with how they show her character until, you know, the other M, but we ignore that game. Let me see. So how did you get into discovering nerdcore in general? You told me how you kind of started like transitioning into rap music and hip hop. And so what first, I think in one of your songs you mentioned you went to a show where it was at and it kind of like sparked your interest from there. But is that true? Is the what you told in the story or in the song true? Or what, is that just like a
That was actually, it's a true, definitely a true story, but it was actually a show that I performed at and also saw other people.
Okay.
Yeah, so nerdcore is really interesting. So for folks who don't know, there's like a subgenre of hip-hop called nerdcore hip-hop.
I guess I should have explained that at the beginning. Go on.
Yeah. And kind of like the kind of pioneers, you know, golden age, whatever you call it, include like artists like Mega Ran, MC Frontalot, MC Chris, Shafe the Dark Lord, and... it's like exactly what it sounds like. It's like nerds who are like, oh, I'm a nerd and I rap. Let me put these two things together.
Mm-hmm.
And the funny thing was I actually wasn't really a big nerd. I had heard some tracks that I liked, but I wasn't like really big into like the nerdcore scene until very, very recently. And I actually started making this music kind of before I knew that it was nerdcore. So like a nerdcore artist called Lex Lexicon Artists, we connected on Instagram. She kind of like discovered
she has a great
like,
name, by the way. Lexicon artist. That's so good.
Yeah, so good. And she introduced me to like the nerdcore community and was like, check out this dude Super Smack, he does what we do. And I was like, oh, look at all these other people. And that's what the song was actually about.
Okay.
The song is called Everybody Got Game, and that's the song with the Wii Shop theme.
Yes, I was about to say.
And it's that one's on my Neon Red EP. And I chose to close with that song because kind of the other, it's kind of like the bookend of my origin story. Choose was like, this is the path that I took to get here. And then Everybody Got Game is about like, here's the community of people I found once I actually got to my destination. And it was cool to see a lot of nerdcore artists, who, especially new up and coming nerdcore artists like Lex, who were just really good. Like, even if you kind of ignored all of the nerdy stuff, the nerdy illusions and stuff, like, we're on a gaming podcast, so I'm sure it's, like, well-appreciated.
Yeah.
And that's always a plus. But, like, even if you ignored it, it's just, like, is this good music? And that, to me, is, like, something that, if it's not good music without the nerd stuff, like, I don't want to listen to it even with the nerd stuff. And I went to this show at South by Southwest where I was one of the performers. There was this nerdcore showcase, and... before I performed, I got to see like act after act after act, and I was like, this is good music, and they're cool people, and we're all gonna go get ramen and play Super Smash Brothers after this concert. And it was just like that feeling of like finding when you do something that you think is so kind of weird and oddball, and then you end up finding a bunch of other people who are kind of doing a similar thing. That feeling of like, oh, kindred spirits.
That's you found a community to be a part of.
Yeah,
I can relate to that. That's I guess to give a bit of a personal anecdote, some of the conventions I've gone to, I've started to meet other content creators, but it was cool to meet a lot of YouTubers and other stuff. And so once I started doing this, then all of a sudden I'm like, okay, I'm starting to relate to these other content creators a little bit more, because now I can kind of, I do something in the same vein, not quite the same. I think being a YouTuber is a lot more difficult than what I do, which is just recording a conversation. But it's definitely a cool feeling.
Oh yeah, I always think of that scene in Batman Begins, when like they introduce Jim Gordon, who's like not yet the commissioner, but he's like a good cop, and he's like one of the few good people trying to do good stuff in Gotham. And then like he meets Batman, and then like Gordon's like, you're just one man. And Batman's like, now we're two.
Yeah.
It's like that feeling of like, oh, there's somebody out there who's like, they're also fighting a good fight.
And one of the things you mentioned before about how if it was just nerdcore, if it was just rapping about nerdy things and the music was kind of crap, it wouldn't hit, you know? So one of the things we were talking about Game Chops before, and also with your music and Mega Ran and a lot of the other other good nerdcore rappers, and just people who do video game adjacent music in general. Mm-hmm. What I love finding is music where it's like you play this and then you tell someone like, oh, yo, this is about Zelda, or oh, this is actually about Nintendo, and it blows their mind. Right. I've told this story before on the podcast, and I think this might be your first time hearing. Yeah, I guess it would, because I haven't told you this story before, but at a convention I went to, at Too Many Games, Mega Ran, I think Mega Ran performed at this one. I don't know, though. It was a couple years ago now. Game Chops had one of their DJs performing at the after party for the VIP, the people who paid for the VIP package, right? And that's the only con I've ever paid for the VIP package for, so I was there. And a wedding crashed the rave afterwards. They had this big DJ battle dance party at the end of the night, and it's like 11 o'clock, 10 o'clock at night, and all of a sudden we see this guy and this girl, and this guy in this tux and this girl in this beautiful, not a wedding dress, it was one of the bridesmaids, but this beautiful dress. And I remember my friend and I just kind of stared at each other like, this doesn't seem right, like what's going on here? I actually told the story earlier this year when I had James Landino on. And
oh yeah, he's dope.
He's awesome. He's such a nice guy too. And like they disappear, and then 5 minutes later, the whole bridal party shows up and just crashes the rave, and they're plastered at this point. Oh my god, they were so drunk, it was ridiculous. And I remember seeing like there was some creepy looking like guys that were trying to flirt with her, even though I thought like she just got married, dude. Like, come on.
Like, yeah, not
read
okay.
The room. But I remember she was like leaning over, she's like, what is this? And they're like, it's a video game convention. And the look on her face was, what, are you, excuse me, this is a gaming convention? So it's like, I love that feeling of finding, whether it's a music artist or just something that's like video game adjacent, that when you show it to someone, they're like, wait, this is related to video games? And you go, yeah, it's game related. Same thing with even like t-shirts and clothing, like your Switch jacket. If you don't tell someone that it's a Nintendo Switch thing, they just think it's a stylish jacket.
Yeah.
You know what
I
mean?
Yeah, I think that's like, that's the magic trick of like, I don't know, of like good culture. It's really appreciated by the people on the inside, but it can also be appreciated by people on the outside.
That's a good point to make. I have a t-shirt that it's a Mario shirt, but it's Mario like on the side, like, but down by my waist, right?
Oh yeah.
And
yeah,
so
yeah,
from the front you can't see what it is, because the entire left side is this dark gray, it's just dark gray, and then the entire right side, like right around my hip and stomach area, is Mario. And it starts like like a third, like two thirds of the way over on my side, and it wraps around the whole side toward to the back to get the last third. And it's just,
that's rad.
It, you're, unless you're looking at me from the side and my arm's not blocking Mario, you wouldn't know it's a Mario shirt. So stuff like that. Anyway, so I'm trying to think.
That's cool.
Thank you. I got it from Club Nintendo actually before that closed down. Yeah. So my next question for you, what are some of your music influences? You kind of talked about how you did a lot of research with hip hop and R&B to kind of, once you got into this, you wanted to learn more. But besides, whether it's with that or with musical theater or, excuse me, R&B, like what are your musical influences?
Yeah. So it changes with the seasons. With the chapters. I mentioned like chapter one of Super Smack earlier. I like to think of kind of my career and my music trajectory in like these like arcs or like chapters or seasons or whatever. And I like to be able to have my sound be constantly evolving. I don't want to ever put out a song where someone's like, that's cool, but it kind of sounds like this other one that you did a mm-hmm. year ago. Like, I don't ever want to be in that position. I'll just be bored if that becomes the case. So early influences, and all of these influences, I think, build on each other. It's like cumulative, right?
Yeah, it's collective. It's like going through life. You build more experiences. It, like, personally, even if you take out music, and that, you know, they compound on each other, and you change over time. So similarly, music would do that too.
Yeah. So okay, early like hip hop influences were, so from like the golden age of hip hop, like De La Soul. I love that group. Love that collective. I love what they did with, they're dope rappers and they were really funny and they would tackle these like crazy subjects, but then they would also show like a more like contemplative, side as well, where some of their tracks are like, whoa, this is like a vibe. Like before, like people kind of use that terminology. It's like, you're just like bringing me into your headspace right now. And it's not very like on the nose. It's just kind of like about the atmosphere of it. And I really like that. There's an indie rapper called Homeboy Sandman. I don't know if he's really indie. He's like pretty big actually. But I like to think.
I've never heard of him before. So I'm not saying that doesn't mean he's
not dope. Big.
It's just, I'm so far out of any kind of hip hop like knowledge. So this type of stuff is interesting to me.
He's amazing. He's from Queens. He's like contemporary, so he's like still made stuff now. His wordplay and his bars and his delivery were definitely major influences on me. It's really just super clever. All of his writing is just super, super clever. All of his songs just slap. They're like really fun and catchy. And he's like really real and raw. And I also like his like philosophy is like very much, he's like a monk and a comedian, but like in a rapper form, if that makes sense. So yeah, those are
some.
And
what was his
like
name again? Sorry,
Homeboy Sandman.
I'm writing that down just because that sounds good.
Yeah, he's like 6'3" or something. Like, I saw him live once. Dude, he's a big boy. Enormous. Though. He's tall. He's tall. I think he's Puerto Rican. He's great. And so yeah, on like the hip hop side, those are just like a couple I could like keep going on forever. In terms of like other genres, so indie pop is one that I used to listen to that music. That used to be my only genre of music, like in college, that I used to listen to.
Okay.
And now I actually found that it's kind of coming back full circle, because not yet on a lot of the tracks that I've released, but a lot of the tracks that I'm cooking up like in the oven that are like going to come out in the next couple months. I'm working on a sequel to Neon Red called Neon Blue, by the way.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. Had to do it. And that sound is going to be a lot more melodic and kind of like indie pop influence. And I actually sing a lot more on those tracks. And I'm really excited about these because it's like to do like the mix of singing and rapping. And there's a couple bands in like the indie pop scene that their sound is, and the way they sing is so influential. So Junior is one. Yeah, I have a hard time saying that.
I recognize them from DDR.
Do they have a song in DDR?
If I remember correctly, hold on, let me double check while we're talking, but I'm pretty sure Junior has had music.
Okay, it might be a different one, because they're a little bit more recent.
Is it like Junior as in like, but it's written as JRJR?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, yeah, no, never mind. It's Junior that I'm thinking of is...
Oh, okay, like fully spelled out.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do love DDR tracks.
Let me actually double check that, because now I'm curious about
it. Oh, yeah.
Oh, no, never mind. It's Junior Senior. I'm an idiot.
Junior Senior, yeah.
That's
yeah.
what it is.
Yeah, so Junior, and Vacationer are like some indie pop bands that I really like their sound. And then I just pull from everything. Obviously, like musical theater, like some of the tracks that I do are very like storytelling-y or like character-based. And so, everything from like In the Heights to The Music Man are like things that I pull from occasionally as well. So yeah, I like to keep like a pretty diverse set of influences. I've also been like listening to a lot of pop music, which I don't normally listen to pop just for enjoyment, but I've been listening to it to study like mixing techniques, because that's like really like kind of like a cutting edge in a way of like just like what is the industry doing and like figuring out of like what to how to manipulate voice sounds on recordings.
Mm-hmm.
And so I researched that a lot too. I've been listening to a little bit of K-pop. I don't know a lot of artists really, but like I've just been listening to it because they do some crazy wild like Hail Mary type plays with like their mixing techniques and stuff.
Interesting. Okay.
And it's just like it's just like cool to observe.
I don't know a lot of K-pop, but one that I do like is FX, and they have a song called Electric Shock. It's like it's a little it's older now. It's probably like 7 years old, but that song is fucking it's so catchy.
I just remembered one.
Go for it.
Strong recommendation to anyone listening to go check out Nakamura Emi. She is this Japanese Nakamura space EMI.
Okay.
Yeah. She did something that gave her exposure in kind of America, which is how I got to know her. She did the closing theme song for an anime called Megalobox.
I've never heard of that anime, but okay.
Yeah. It's like it's pretty good, like just like action anime about like boxers and boxing. And she is this Japanese singer-songwriter. And she has this really unique sound where she'll like, it's over like acoustic guitar and she'll sing, but then she'll also like rap. It's not like hip hop, but it is rap where it's like not on a pitch and she's just like talking really fast and it's in Japanese and it's so fierce and so dope. But then she also like has this beautiful singing voice and it's like unlike anything that I've heard. I think she's totally great and like very much slept on, or at least like she's not very well known yet in like America, but she is like a force. I really like her.
I'm gonna have to check her out then. Do you like any like synthwave kind of pop at all, or is that
like what?
Trying to think of a good example. Like, have you ever heard of a band called The Midnight?
No.
I'll send you a link afterwards. It's kind of like synthwave. The best way I can describe
it's kinda it. Kind of like 80s-ish?
Yeah. It's very 80s.
Okay, cool. I dig that.
They actually have... So, hold on. I'm going to go to their Bandcamp page because I actually tried to contact them because I wanted one of their songs as an outro, but...
Mm-hmm.
And, like, they said that, you know, streamers, you can use this on your... You can use this, but I couldn't get a hold... Like, but since I'm not a streamer, I'm like, does that apply to podcasts? I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But on their Bandcamp page, they have... I thought it was a really cool... It's a good description of their music. And it says there's a Japanese term, mano no aware, and it means, basically, the sad beauty of seeing time pass, the aching awareness of impermanence. And that, like...
Whoa.
Right? Like, it hit me hard. So it's they have a very bittersweet nostalgia vibe, but very 80s in that as well.
I like that.
And I apologize if I mispronounce the Japanese phrase. I'm obviously a dumb American, so... But
yeah, no problem. Mono no aware.
Yeah. I did actually take Japanese in college, but I can't...
Oh, nice. Yeah, I minored in it. And I was pretty good at one point, but I was... it all went down the toilet after I stopped studying it. Because it's so hard.
It's weird because I remember some basic sentence structure, like... You know, which participles you are meant for the subject and which participles are meant for location and by means of. So, like, I could say I go to work by car, or I drive mm-hmm. to work, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. that's, and I understand the sentence structure of it, but if you ask me, like, anything else with it, I'm like, I can't conjugate that. I don't know how to change it into different tenses and stuff like that. I don't remember in the slightest, but yeah, no. So they're called the Midnight, and I don't know how to describe it. Like, their melodies are very catchy, and I don't know if you like that kind of synthwave vibe stuff, like that 80s synthwave thing. I can't speak that 80s synthwave stuff. I definitely think you'll like it.
Cool. Yeah, I love kind of that sound, that like synth wave, like new wave kind of pop sound. I don't know. I dig that.
Okay. So before we wrap up, because we've been going for almost an hour, which has been awesome.
Nice.
I was going to ask you, what are your plans for the future? You already mentioned Neon Blue, but what other, like, do you have anything that you want to, that's coming up that you're working on, or any like things that you can tease at all?
Yeah, so Neon Blue is the big one that I can tease. There's also a lot of other things that I probably should keep secret. I have a music video that is almost done, actually. I'm not sure yet when I'm going to release it, but that one is going to be
Will it be out in November? Because it's like over a month away at the time we're recording this.
I don't know. I don't know if it's going to be out in November. It might be later.
Okay.
But Neon Blue is going to be so Neon Red was my first EP, and that's kind of like this very fast paced, like fun, like sunshiny day driving in the sun type of sound. And then Neon Blue is going to be a little bit more like introspective, kind of like vibey, like a little more mellow. I call it like lyrical lo-fi.
Okay.
I listen to a lot of lo-fi, and a lot of the lo-fi I listen to is like instrumental. If lo-fi had a lyrical aspect to it, that's kind of what I call this. And there's a lot of like kind of video game inspiration going on there.
There's a lot of video game lo-fi out there. Game Chops, we were talking about them. They have a ton. Mario and Chill, Zelda and Chill.
Yep.
They're coming out with one in like 2 days from the time we're recording mm-hmm. this, but The World of Lo-Fi, they're coming out with the second mm-hmm. album of that in like 2 days.
Yeah, so this is kind of like my take on that, but also like fused with like indie pop, and then also since I'm a vocal performer, like with words and lyrics as well. So I'm really excited about that EP. And then this won't be as recent by the time this episode comes out, but as we mentioned earlier, like I just dropped my new track Screens, that actually has Lex Lexicon artists on there, as well as a couple other really dope nerdcore rappers. So right now, I'm still just like kind of promoting that. It actually kind of blew up on my Spotify, like performed like 10 times better than my other stuff. So that's
good
cool.
to hear, though. That's awesome.
Yeah. So those are the main things that I'm working on right now is the EP. I'm also starting to actually write music for a couple of podcasts, like the intro music and outro music, which I'm really excited about. I like working in music and anything creative, but I also like kind of like crossing over and not just being like, I don't like being like, oh, I'm just a singer songwriter and I'm just gonna, you know, do 3 minute songs and put them on Spotify. Like I like fitting music into other things as well. So the podcast thing is like something I'm pretty excited about.
It's a good thing to get into, because podcasts, like everyone has one. Everyone has a podcast, so you'll have no shortage of work for that. I was going to ask, this is kind of like off topic, but I was just thinking about it. You're talking about you're a vocal performer and whatnot. Mm-hmm. What types of, it's kind of a goofy question, but what type of vocal warm-ups do you do? I actually took voice lessons for a couple months and I loved it, but I'm not a singer. I loved it.
Yeah, so just like scales and stuff, just like something, the voice is like a muscle. Mm-hmm. So you've got to warm it up, just like if you were about to go, you know, run a 5K, you wouldn't do it without stretching. So yeah, just the basic, like, I'm really bad with like biology and like knowing all the names for all the different parts of the human body that make sound and voice and stuff, but just getting all of those warmed up. And I have like, I actually have like a couple of recorded voice lessons from my musical theater days that mm-hmm. I use as like warm-ups now. Like when I was on tour last year with Lex, like we would be driving from New York to DC for like our next show. And like, you know, we would be like 30 minutes away from the venue and I would put on my vocal warm-ups in the car, like while driving. Yeah. Cause you don't want to damage your voice.
I remember when I was taking voice lessons, one of my favorite ones is that my voice teacher would have me lay on the floor with a book on my chest, and mm-hmm. it was supposed to teach you to project more and also like use your diaphragm to push the air out instead of kind of singing with your chest, singing with your yeah. diaphragm type of thing.
Yeah,
that was a fun one. I mean, it was really difficult for me because I'm not, like I said, I'm not a singer, but it was still super fun. It got me thinking about something else though. You talking about do you plan on doing any tours once COVID is over? Or would you want to go back to doing a tour?
Yeah. I mean, if it's like once things are safe and if and when things become safe and people feel comfortable going out to shows, I'm so excited for that day. I think that people, myself included, took live performance for granted, and I think are really going to appreciate it when it comes back. Like the fact that like people are out and like busting their butts. Like I'm really like performing on stage, just trying to entertain people. Like that's such an admirable thing. And I think I'm hopeful that people will be even more appreciative of that. Not that they weren't before, but I think the shows are going to be really popping when things get back on. And I'm really excited to get back out there because I love live performance. And in the meantime, I'm just kind of focusing on improving and all the things that I can otherwise.
I guess to kind of leave that on a hope, not to, before we go into the plugs, to leave it on a bit of a hopeful note, I do think we're going to go back to normal hopefully in the next year or two. I mean,
yeah,
it's weird because people always talk, I hear so many people talking doom and gloom about it, and I understand, like, especially with everything that's going on in the world outside of COVID, it's easy to get pessimistic about it. But I also think it's important to remember that the world has gone through this type of thing before. I mean, if like just 100 years ago, we had the Spanish flu, world had to go deal with that. And they had less knowledge of medicine to recover from that. So, I mean, I'm not saying it's going to be easy. It's, or if it's like a switch, but like,
yeah,
we did it then, we did it with the bubonic plague, there was even less. So it's like, eventually things are going to go back to normal. It's just a matter of time. And yeah, just a matter of time.
Yeah. And I would never want to downplay anything, especially if people have like different personal experiences. Things obviously need to be, things are very serious and should be taken seriously.
But at the
same time, like kind of going back to like one of the things that makes me a Nintendo fan is like, I'm like at my core, I'm like a pretty optimistic person. This is why I like these like happy games and stuff like that. And like, I think it's important to like keep a positive attitude and just like put good energy out there. And, cause otherwise if you're like just in like doom and gloom all the time and just like depressed, that's actually a sickness as well. Like a mental sickness. And that's like something that should also be avoided. So, good vibes. And props to you and the show. I've been listening to the show a lot like throughout quarantine, and it's just been a huge bright spot. I'm just like, let me just like listen to like people talk about video games for like an hour. It's like it's medicine, man. So props.
Well, thank you for listening. I'm bad at taking compliments, but thank you.
Yeah.
So is there anything you would like to plug? Obviously screens, but what are your plugs? Where can the people find you online? And is there anything you would like them to check out?
Yeah. So I'm actually going to be releasing some like kind of remastered versions of some of my works over the next couple months. And I'm always popping or like releasing like new stuff. So the best way to like stay in touch and follow is, follow me on Spotify, because that's where like all my new music goes, and that's like one of the best places to follow me. And then also on Instagram, I share like a lot of my dance content and just like life content on Instagram as well, and like a lot of behind the scenes stuff. So if there was anything to plug, it would be those two, in addition to like my, you know, specifically my new release Screens, and then my EP Neon Red, all the stuff that we've talked about on the show already. But you can find like all of those on both like my Instagram and my Spotify. So those would be the two main ones. My Instagram is at SuperSmackRaps, SuperSmackRaps, just like all one word. And then my Spotify is just SuperSmack. So yeah, you can find me on there. And if anyone wants to get in touch with me, I'm actually like pretty open. Like we connected over DMs. So just like DM me, and like, if you're a real person and you're not a robot and you're not trying to scam me, like I'll probably respond.
And then as for me, as usual, you can follow me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at StillLoadingPod on all of them. You can email me, StillLoadingContact@gmail.com. If you want to support the show, you can do that in a number of ways. Giving it a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or whichever podcasting app you use helps more people find the show. You can also check out the Patreon, patreon.com/StillLoadingPod. Even just $1 a month will help grow the show. Check out the Podbeard Network, the network I'm a part of. And the most important shout out I should remember every episode. Sometimes I forget. The nonprofit organization I'm partnered with, the Bit by Bit Foundation. The Bit by Bit Foundation is a nonprofit organization whose mission is to put video games and video game consoles in the hands of children receiving inpatient care at children's hospitals. You can check them out at bitbybitfoundation.org and consider donating. So with all
heck
that
yeah.
said, yeah, they're a good, I actually, I've talked about it before, but I met the guy, one of the guys who are on the board for that nonprofit I used to work with at a grocery store. And it's just kind of weird how that connection has kind of evolved into something where he's now part of this awesome nonprofit. And they actually recently they took a hiatus because of COVID, but I've seen the last like week of this recording, they've donated to two separate hospitals like Nintendo Switches and video game consoles and stuff.
Oh, that's
like
great.
So but yeah, cool. So that should do it for this.
Also mention my email. I forgot to mention my email.
No, go for it.
But if anyone wants to reach me by email, I'm smack@supersmackraps.com. So yeah, you can just hit me up there. And I also have an email list if you don't do Spotify or Instagram but want to stay in touch, just like shoot me an email and I'll keep you in the loop.
All right, and that should do it. So, Smack, once again, thank you for joining me on this episode.
Appreciate it. Thanks, man.
And I will see you all next time.
My dear rapper friends for coming out to church today. Here in the basement of this church where they usually hold AA, I co-opted the space and swapped that A with a big fucking S so we could get these sins up off our chest. I'm not the priest, but please confess to me the demons that seeped in between you and your screens. You can use the podium, your chair, or those cushions for your knees. I only ask we keep this confidential, nothing more. Oh, and one more thing I almost forgot, please check your phones at the door. Oh Lord, see these things I've done. Feels like I'm trapped in a maze, and although I run, I'm still lost here. I'm still lost here. And all I see around me are these screens, too many goddamn screens. I'm twisted, I'm tilted, I've turned on too many screens. Too many screens, too many goddamn screens. I'm twisted, I'm tilted, I've turned on too many screens.
Facebook, Insta, Twitter. Facebook, Reddit, Insta, Twitter. Gmail? What? Whether it's a dank meme or a shit post, you bet I'll be reading into detail. Cause I've been staring nonstop at my smartphone or my desktop, I'm just aimlessly scrolling. Ever since I was a kid, I've been using the internet strictly to fill in this hole in my heart. Where do I start? Back in IRC chat rooms and forums, just talking to strangers and casually adding those randos on MSN Messenger, straight disregarding the dangers of internet abuse of people preying on minors. All I know is I wanted to satiate my desires of fame and appreciation I'm still seeking on Facebook. So hey, it's looking like the situation is dire. I don't know what I'm waiting for. A text from that one person that I'm craving, or an email that will tell me that I made it, or maybe a notification to show I ain't ignored. You say I'm bored, but I blame inertia. You don't know the ways that your brain can hurt ya. Going through the pages of Reddit and searching. Fuck all draining sands like the Prince of Persia. Guess it's the urge for the dopamine hit. The second I get it, I know it's legit. I put effort in taking control of my shit, but the questions I don't think I know when to quit. No checking or scrolling, I better live in the moment. Less I let it go over and then regret and I'm older. I need to leave the big bad social media machine, and if I never relapse, I'll be free of the screen.
Too many goddamn screens. I'm twisted, I'm tilted, I've turned on too many screens. Too many screens, too many goddamn screens. I'm twisted, I'm tilted, I've turned on too many screens. Dash. I've been up for 5 days trying to make this grind pay. Watch him catch a night wave while I make this live play. Whoa, I could use a nap or 2 days to snooze and rap. It's kinda hard, look super smack. Listen, I just have to tell ya, even with a packed bar yelling my name, I feel like a failure.
It's 2 a.m. and I'm playing games to decompress. Cause when I went, say I haven't moved the needle yet, or that I'm not experiencing things I dream of. Guess it's what you rent is the only way off of sleepiness. Lots of vodka soda, but some mind control. And I was for him hopeless. Gotta call it a morning. It's at 9:30 a.m. But I'm hurting. Wait a minute. Nah, it's 5. I'll survive. Took some shots and down some coffee. I like 9 before my show. Now it's 6. Bae just walked in yawning in her eye. She rolled. My bad. She leaves me to finish the story arc that I'm concerned I might delete if I get up and land up on the notion that I need to breathe in the set up of magic characters and puzzles on the screen. I'm digested. I'm like a workaholic, alcoholic, gameaholic, fiend. I'm obsessive. And if I ever get to sleep, I'm reflective of what I just played. These games keep me from stressing. I guess I must say many screens I need to fluoresce it. Oh no.
Schaefer, and I'm an addict.
Oh, no.
20 plus years of daily usage, it's far surpassed a bad habit. With that first shot I got for free, I never thought I'd be a fiend, a junkie for pornography, a drug I'm popping via screens. I used to call my viewing healthy, hell, I nattered on about it. Before I noticed, I no longer get turned on without it. In my old sex drive, which I once thought was endless,
gone.
Replaced by shame, which came along with my newfound dependence. I'm online and I'm strung out, glassy-eyed with my tongue out. Take that dose and I feel worse. I got 30 tabs open and I still search for that last clip that I can't find. That fast hit for this sick mind. I go hard till I get off, like I'm livestock feeding from a pig's trough. X-tube on my iPhone, coffee shop. JPEGs on my H-drive, lost the job. DTs on the N-train, hopping off and beeline to a PC and I gotta stop. BDSM to DDLG to JOY, POV, going full HD. Every night getting high with my DOC and bye-bye to my love life, RIP.
I'm supposed to be super, that's the moniker. Sometimes I lose it though, surrender to my monitor. Playing Smash long past the time it was fun. Funny when your favorite work of art and your addiction become 1 a.m.
to 8 a.m. Yo, Desh, I'm right there with you. Lex and Schaefer, different strains, but the same disease I feel. You got poison ivy in our psyche, shooting that IV, call it IG. A girl on guy scene are getting hit by a side B. Why don't you just die, screen?
Too many screens, too many goddamn screens. I'm twisted, I'm tilted, I've turned on too many screens. Too many screens, too many screens, too many goddamn screens. I'm twisted, I'm tilted, I've turned on too many screens.